Hey, it's Joe. I don't know about you, but for me, it sure is a struggle to build muscle while reducing body fat. I recently completed an 18-month effort using a fasting-mimicking diet protocol to do just that. I started and ended with a DEXA scan to avoid any self-deception, and dang it, the results were just not what I wanted. It wasn't terrible, as I reduced my body fat from 16 to 15%, but I did not achieve my muscle-building or visceral fat loss goals. On the other hand, I did manage to boost my HRV, reduce my resting heart rate, and banish my body aches. So not bad, but the truth is that I have always struggled with balancing calorie surplus with calorie deficit. On that note, today I have Renee Fitton on the podcast. Renee is a longevity dietitian. She holds a master's degree in longevity nutrition earned with Dr. Longo at UCLA. And she's the director of education at El Nutra, the Prolon fasting mimicking diet company. In our talk, Renee explores the path to finding the minimum calorie and protein consumption over time, but not every day, to live a long time as a vigorous person. So let's get into it. Let's talk to Renee Fitton to learn her ideas for losing body fat and boosting autophagy while gaining muscle. Renee Fitton, welcome to the Wise Athletes Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited to be here. And honestly, I think this topic that we're going to cover today, I hope, is kind of new for a handful of your listeners, at least in the way that we're going to cover it today.
Excellent. Well, I think so. Now, fasting mimicking diets, which is kind of your thing. I don't want to steal your thunder here, so I'll give you a chance in a second to tell us who you are and what do you know. But the fasting mimicking diet we have talked about on the podcast before. Mm-hmm. I've talked about it, I think, more than that, because I'm a fan of it myself. But I think we are going to hit on it in a new angle that's going to be useful. And some of that may come from some of my personal experience in using the fasting mimicking diet here for the last 18 months, bookended with DEXA scans to see what really happened. Anyway, I'm really looking forward to it.
Me too. And let me just tell you that on top of all of that incredible insight that you are going to share, since the last time that we chatted, there has been a lot of new research that has come out too. So there's plenty that we can cover that hasn't been covered before.
Excellent. All right. And I will warn you in the audience that it is possible that I've kind of gotten to where I want to cut a slice of cheese thinner than the knife here. And it's just like, it's impossible. Nobody knows, you know, that you're looking for too much. But anyway, if that's the way it is, then just tell us what is known and what we can rely on, or experiments we could do on ourselves to find out what works for us, right?
Absolutely.
Well, good. So tell us, who are you, Renee? What do you do? How did you get to know all this stuff?
Yes. Well, I am a registered dietitian, but I actually consider myself a longevity dietitian. Mm. I was specifically got my master's degree in health span nutrition from the very one and only longevity nutrition program in the world out of USC. Wow. It was founded by Dr. Walter Longo, who you may be familiar with.
I know him.
Yes, he is one, my mentor, but also the leading longevity researcher recognized today in the world. So very, very lucky to have gotten that experience and have been in the nutrition world for like nearly two decades now. Wow. And really just trying to, you know, hone in on these really kind of optimizing solutions for our health, wellness, longevity, and therefore why I think it makes sense that I'm here today.
Excellent. Well, I'll speak for myself and say I'm dying to learn what you have to tell us.
Well, I am dying to tell you. And so, I mean, we can just like dig in wherever you think makes sense.
Well, so let's start at the top just to make sure that you know who we're talking to in the audience, and maybe for the audience's sake to know what this is aimed at. Mm-hmm. The audience here is the older athlete. And so that means we're not sort of your average sedentary civilized person. We're not low activity. Some of us might be overfed, you know, at least periodically, but mostly I'd say the people here are fairly fit. They try mm-hmm. really hard to stay that way. And they're listening here because they want to get better, whether that's better body composition to help them with their athletic performance or with their health span, which would help them with their athletic performance 10 years from now,
exactly.
You know, or what, you know, they're here for their own reasons. For myself, I am sort of a lifelong athlete. I have done a lot of cardio work in recent past, and the most recent time I have been emphasizing weightlifting, just trying to recover muscle mass that I lost when I was doing a lot of endurance cycling.
Yeah.
And in the last 18 months, I had done a DEXA scan and had come to understand that I had, I was good. You know, it was pretty good, you know, good bones, under a pound of visceral fat, 16% body fat. My muscle mass was good, you know, for my age, that sort of thing. So it wasn't like I was starting at a bad spot and I had this, right. You know, I needed a life-changing event, but of course, you know, I want to be better. And at around that same time, I had spoken to Dr. Anton of Prolon, the fasting mimicking diet people, and I had learned about that. And so I have, over the last 18 months, until I just had another DEXA scan a week ago, I have been doing far more frequent fasting mimicking diets than Dr. Anton had suggested, because, you know, Hey, if a little's good, more's better, right? You know, and so I was doing them, you know, at one point I was doing them like every month. And I was really getting some, aside from like body comp, I was getting some amazing effects on my HRV.
Mm-hmm.
I was like chronically in the 30s. And then doing this over this period of time that I'm describing, it got to where my HRV was every day in like 60s and 70s. So it had really gotten my resting HRV up quite a bit. And when I would do these fasting mimicking diet kits, after about the third day or so in the 5-day program, all of the aches in my body were gone. I had no body aches anymore. It was like I was taking painkillers or something. I just had no pain in my body anymore. You know, like I was 25 years old or something. It was like sort of a miracle. Of course, it didn't last. You know, after about a week and a half, 2 weeks, it could start creeping back. And so that was one of the reasons why I would be very aggressive in doing it again, because I wanted that.
Right.
The weight loss was somewhat hard to understand in that I did, of course, I lost good weight every single time. Like 10 pounds, I think, one time I lost. Mm-hmm. And some of that was because, of course, I don't follow directions very well. And I was doing hard cardio exercises and lifting weights while I'm doing the fasting mimicking diet. And I was totally under eating by more than, you know, what was prescribed. So my weight was kind of bouncing around, but over time it was trending down. And at the end of this 18-month period, I had my weight was down 1%. So it was like 207 down to 205. My body fat went from 16.3 to 15.3. My visceral fat went up by 2%. Dang it. Again, that might be within the margin of error. I mean, maybe it went up a lot more than that, but maybe it went down, or I mean, who knows? The lean mass was actually down by insignificant digits. So essentially zero, didn't change. Fat mass was down 7%. So that's good. I mean, that's only like a three something. I mean, anyway, the weight loss that you saw there, the two and a bit, that was just all fat. So that's good. I mean, it's almost impossible to just lose fat when you lose weight. But it wasn't a big change. And my bone mass didn't change in 18 months.
Well, thank goodness.
Yes.
So I mean, what I'm hearing is that your audience and you are optimizers. And that is honestly, in my opinion, some of the best people to leverage the benefits of fasting and fasting mimicking, specifically these prolonged experiences of these things, which are about 5 days or so. And that's because when you are optimizing, you are looking for these very small changes, but that are significant for you, because you are at that point where small changes do make the difference. Hmm. And when you are able to achieve that fat loss with muscle protection, which again, kind of, you mentioned it. It is unheard of to be able to achieve those two things at once, especially when you have significant lean mass, you have significant muscle. People are always assuming that if you're going to go into these fasted states, you're going to lose, sure, maybe fat, but you'll also lose muscle. And that especially as we're talking to an older population, this is where it's really critical. I mean, we know that once you hit 60, you can lose 1% of your lean mass every single year. So in 18 months, not only did you not lose, but you actually stayed relatively consistent, plus you did lose 7% fat mass. So to me, what I'm hearing, especially because those the stats that you're giving me are of somebody who is a little bit older, where we would typically see drops in those and not significant changes. To me, I actually hear those as significant changes.
Yeah. You know, I would like to look more like Arnold Schwarzenegger did when he was a young man, but yeah, I'll take it. I'll take it. So what this zeroes my attention in is on this sort of conundrum that people like me face, where we want to get our body composition right, you know, having low visceral fat, very important for your metabolic health. And, you know, and I guess everybody's a little different, but, you know, it's hard to have low visceral fat, you know, if you've got high body fat. So, you know, you want to get your body fat right. As you get into your older years, you keep hearing about, oh, you got to have your muscle mass, right? You don't want to get old and frail, then you fall down and you break your bones and goodbye. So, and putting on a lot of muscle and strength when you're old, and whatever that means is like somebody older than me, that is harder to do than getting it while you're younger and then holding on to it. Anyway, this is, I think that this is the same thing with bone density, is like have good bone density and keep it. Don't try to get it back.
Yes. It's certainly harder to do it that way. But I mean, with this audience, I'm not too concerned about that. I think for most of you, you're just trying to maintain or even, again, kind of increase and optimize where you can. Where that becomes especially important and where balance becomes especially important is in this population, where you are you're trying to do all of the things, right, Joe? You're trying to lean out, but you're also trying to build muscle, but you're also trying to get rid of that visceral fat. And you're also trying to make sure that you have a healthy, you know, insulin sensitivity and blood sugar levels and all of the things. Like, we're trying to do it all. And when you're trying to do it all, I mean, that's usually where people run into challenges. And that's why I think that the fasting mimicking diet, done periodically, maybe not eight times over a course of 18 months, but honestly, we do have a lot of people that do it and see incredible results. And that's, you know, you got to listen to your body. But by adding this tool, you are able to tap into so many different verticals without impacting negatively another vertical. So you are tapping into fat while protecting your muscle, while also supporting your biological age, while also supporting healthy blood sugar levels, while also supporting, you know, and I can keep going. The immunity, the inflammation, all of these things are being tapped into. And why? Because with this protocol, we are triggering cellular cleanup, and our body is made up entirely of cells. So whether it be your liver cells or your skin cells or your gut cells, they're all getting a little bit of a revamp with each time you do a cycle. And that's really where, that's again, where for my optimizers, like this is gold, because you're letting your body figure out where to spend its energy, where to optimize, and that's where it'll go.
So I think what I hear you saying is that when I was getting the essentially losing the chronic pain in my body, that was my immune system kind of getting a reset. But there were other things getting a reset that I couldn't feel that were, that are also important for my, you know, health now and health into the future.
Yeah, there are 47 clinical trials at this point in fasting mimicking, and the breadth of the research is huge. So neurological studies, gut health studies, skin health studies, of course, metabolic health studies. So, you know, weight loss and muscle protection is huge and amazing, but it's like such a small sliver of the big pie that can be impacted with fasting, which is kind of a funny saying to put pie with fasting, but here we are doing it anyway.
Yeah. And so as I was talking about the things that I wanted, you know, I do want the cellular cleanup, the autophagy, mitophagy. Mm-hmm. Anyway, back to the bigger thing is that, what I'm trying to do in general is I'm trying to provide signal to my body to become functionally younger, more like I was when I was younger, maybe better, even stronger, if I can do that, or better endurance, but still I can't get younger really. But I can functionally, in many ways, mm-hmm. I can be like I was if I provide the right signal to the body, that, in a way that it will understand and it'll say, oh, well, we need that in order to survive. Okay, we'll do that.
Yeah.
And if I'm sitting on the couch, the body will say, oh, well, here's what I'll make a body that's really good for sitting on the couch. Good luck with that one. And, and I want a body that's really good at, riding my bike a long way or lifting heavy weights or, mm-hmm. not watching where I'm going and being able to stumble and catch myself and not throw my back out and then, have to yeah. go to the chiropractor. So, I want to provide that signal, whatever that is, mm-hmm. And over time that's more and more things. But at the same time, I have to give my body the rest and the resources it needs to be mm-hmm. able to do the thing that I'm trying to tell it to do. And so it's hard because, I need some sort of surplus. I need extra protein and calories in order for my body to build and grow. Yep. But if I'm always giving it extra calories, then it never gets the signal to, clean out all the old broken stuff. So, yes. if I'm always on a calorie surplus, well, then I'm getting fatter, even if I am getting more muscular. If right. I'm always in autophagy, I mean, I could starve to death and die of autophagy. So, I don't want to be under eating all of the time, and be a cold, frail person. But I've got to have some of that somehow, into my life, as much as I hate that part, in order to, just balance it all out. So the trick, it's so hard to do. Some of the problems that we have. Let me just say that I believe fasting mimicking has a role in the success here. But the problem is that we are all inundated with bullshit all of the time, And I was just talking really well about the audience listening here today, and I think I'm included in that. And that, we've tried so hard and we've tried so many things and we're so smart and all of that. But, that doesn't mean we're not human beings. And so we are susceptible, just like everybody else, to the allure of the magic beans, the thing that the one thing that's going to make all the difference, the, autophagy is all that you need, or high protein and you're good. The simple solutions are so compelling and they're not wrong. That's the problem, is they're not wrong. They're just not entirely right either. It's not enough. And so it's the experts like you who can help us to kind of really find the middle spaces of where, how do you balance out the surpluses and the deficits and the high protein with the, but not too much protein and all of those things. Maybe you could just like give us your thoughts on this whole idea of how do you balance all this stuff out to find this, it's not really a middle path. It's probably more like a hit the extremes back and forth over time as you get stronger or something. I don't know. What do you think?
I think you hit the nail on the head where you shared a little bit about how you have to balance between growth and cleanup. And this is really important because it's actually exactly how our body behaves. So our body has signals that tell it food is here, it's time to grow, and it really needs specific nutrients and specific foods in the right quantities for it to send that signal. And so one of those big signal senders is going to be high protein. So yes, when we have high protein, it signals our body it's time to grow. We've got the nutrients that we need to succeed in growth. And so that's really important. And when that's turned on, the repair system is actually turned off. And when we turn down high protein as well as high sugar, it does the opposite. We stop the growth signals because we just don't have the nutrients that we need to grow. And our body switches into, okay, well, we don't have growth ingredients right now. So what should we do instead? Let's focus on repair and rejuvenation. And so you have to, in the food that you consume, help your body even out those scales between growth and clean up. And how do we figure out what that perfect balance is? Well, as with anything in the world of health and wellness, it is highly individualized. And so when we look at, for example, somebody with type 2 diabetes, which from what I've heard from your audience is probably very few people listening, but individuals with type 2 diabetes, for example, will do one cycle of fasting mimicking once a month for 6 months in a row. They are doing it very consistently because that's their body needs to focus way more on repair, cleanup, and kind of clearing things out than it needs to focus on building at that point. And so for this audience specifically, the recommendation that I would have is to ideally test your body composition and determine where am I at in my needs right now. Do I need to cut weight? Then if so, I would increase. Do I have any of my biomarkers for metabolic health? So I'm talking blood pressure, blood sugar, cholesterol, even visceral fat. If any of those are like noticeably higher, I would do them more frequently. Now, the most that you would do them is once a month. Do not do them more frequently than once a month because you need to give your body at least 25 days in between cycles to focus on rebuilding. The beauty of autophagy, the beauty of this cleanup is that it gets rid of stuff. But when you get rid of it, you have to replace it. Otherwise, it's not going to work the way that you want it to. So you have to give it at least 25 days, and in some cases, as much as 60 to 90 days to do the rebuilding work so that you have a strong foundation to allow you to build off of. And so for that reason, highly personalized, if you are generally considered healthy, if you have no weight to lose, you have no metabolic markers out of range, you are just truly an optimizer, then I wouldn't recommend it more than every 3 to 4 months. Mm-hmm. So
like, 3 or 4 times a year at the most. Okay. All right.
I'm actually currently on day 3 of my 5-day fasting mimicking diet, number 16. So I have done a good handful myself. And I am now at a point where I'm only doing them 2 to 3 times a year.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, yeah, I do think that that I did it too much. I was in part, I sort of lost my mind because I was so attracted to the no body aches symptom.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it was kind of amazing.
And in that case, because they came back so quickly, there is potentially a world where you should be doing them more frequently. We see some really great research in autoimmune health across multiple sclerosis, type 1 diabetes, a lot of these autoimmune conditions, Crohn's disease, for example, where we see rejuvenation. And in those models, we do see them implemented more frequently as well. So if there's maybe something underlying there, there is a world where for you, more frequently was better.
The weird thing was that my HSCRP, sort of just general inflammation marker, is always really low, you know, 0.2 or something. And so it was strange to me that I would have such a big effect in losing all of those body aches when I didn't really seem to have a lot of inflammation in my body. I mean, I guess maybe I did. It's not showing up in that metric.
Correct.
So that's useful information. I wonder if we could step away from the fasting mimicking for just a second, and let's just talk about diet and the various features of diet, you know, whether it's, you know, how much you eat, when you are going for a surplus, how much should you, you know, be going for versus and deficits, you know, because if, as an example, if you're going for a surplus in order to build, but you're eating and you need something like 200 calories a day, say, I don't know what the number is, but you need 200. But instead, that gave you license to eat whatever you wanted. And I ate 1,000 extra calories a day. Well, okay. So now that month I put on 5 pounds of fat in addition to, getting the growth back after I did my rejuvenation and, you know, the recovery from my, muscle building, whatever other work that I had done. But now I've got 5 pounds of fat because I had so little discipline, or I didn't know what the surplus should have been. So some of these things where I'm saying people are like me, at least I hope I'm not the only one, where, you know, if a little is good, then more is better. And so if a little surplus is going to help me build muscles, well, a big surplus is going to help me build even bigger muscles. You know, okay, well, no, it doesn't work like that, Joe. Don't be a dope. So, but if we can understand, you know, like how big of a calorie surplus and how big of a calorie deficit, you know, because you, if you go too big of a deficit, you're not going to work out. You couldn't possibly have the energy. You know, your body's going to eat up your muscles. I mean, unless you're not, if you're doing fasting mimicking, maybe it doesn't for, you know, reasons that you could explain. But anyway, but if we could just understand, because I think that one of the issues that I had with the fasting mimic is that I knew I was going to do one every single month. So I didn't mind getting fat in between. So I was licensed to overeat. I was, you know, double O, double hamburger, you know, and I was just eating like a pig in between my fasting mimicking diet because I knew I was going to do it. So it's like, okay, I sort of lost half of the benefit, at least, you know, of all the suffering that I was going through and hard work. So if I had been, if I had known more what I should have targeted and been disciplined about it, then the fasting mimicking wouldn't have been about recovering from my indulgences. It would have been more about just this cellular rejuvenation that we're talking about. Can you kind of walk us through some of that? You know, does time-restricted eating make any difference? And is too long of an interval going to be bad for maintaining muscle or building muscle? Calorie surplus, how much? Do I really need a surplus? Calorie deficit? You know, things like that.
For sure. Okay. So many things that we can talk about here. So first, in the world of calorie surplus versus calorie deficit, it really depends on what you're optimizing. So calorie deficit is generally recognized as supporting longevity. Now, small calorie deficits, like if, when you look at like the work of Dr. Roy Walford, for example, he was doing like 50% calorie deficits. And that's way too little because then you run the risk of that muscle frailty. And that is also very problematic for longevity. So instead, in the longevity world, like small calorie deficits are beneficial. Now, keep in mind that if you are exercising, right, then you do need to make sure that you are making up for the calories that you need to support that energy. So it's important that you are not using your basal metabolic rate or like just what you would naturally burn by doing just your daily living activities. You have to use what you're actually using for all of your activity, including what you're burning through your activity. So that's important if you are choosing to go the calorie restriction way. Now, I personally am a big believer in really balancing out muscle growth and longevity by making sure that you maintain and ideally even build muscle and then balancing it with cleanup and repair. So I'm a believer in at least equivalent or slightly increased calories when you are doing weight-bearing exercises and exercise so that you have enough to get you through. But it shouldn't be drastically higher because your body really can only use so much. And so it, you know, there's some people that are like over-consuming by thousands of calories. That's, in my opinion, unnecessary and is veering you too far away from that longevity kind of two-way street. I don't want to go too much into the weeds because, to be honest, I'm not a like athlete dietitian or sports dietitian. There are specialists in that that can help really optimize muscle growth. But what we have to realize is that there is kind of a what we call a kind of a double bottom line, where you have to be, you have to think about the balance of longevity and muscle growth. And they do kind of, you know, kind of counteract and have slightly different ways to get to both of those things. If you're over prioritizing having really, really big Arnold Schwarzenegger muscles, you may actually see a reduction in health span and longevity. And so you want to have enough muscle that you are not frail, but not so much that you are actually excessively triggering these pro-growth and pro-aging pathways. So I guess the long and short of it is, ideally staying in kind of your ideal calorie needs and not going super over or super under. And if you are going to go under, I do it during fasting mimicking periods. And when you are going to go over, especially on weight bearing exercise days where you need to have higher protein. And then the last thing that I'm just going to say really quickly, because I think everybody knows this, is that not all calories are made equal. They technically are, sure, in terms of energy balance. But if you are consuming a ton of processed foods and foods that are filled with excess, even like saturated fat, those are going to impact your health in other ways beyond just how much weight you're losing and how much muscle you're building. They're going to impact your health, and those will eventually, as your health declines, impact your ability to do other things too. So it is important to choose whole foods. It is important to choose to try and limit processed foods. It is important to limit alcohol. All of those things do matter, and it's not just calories in, calories out.
Yeah, that's a good tip. I think everybody does know that to some extent, but I don't think we can hear it too much. We can definitely undermine ourselves by losing sight of that. Okay, so here's where I think that we've gotten to. If we're going to do the fasting mimicking every 3 months, say, let's just go down that path. That'll be sort of my own plan at this point, every 3 months. Yeah. Well, that means that if I do a fasting mimicking and I can lose somewhere in the like 5 to say 10 pounds, you know, if I'm more successful than most, then, well, I better not have more than 5 or 10 pounds to lose in 3 months. And actually it's not even as dramatic as that, because most of the fasting mimicking weight that I've ever lost comes right back, because it's mostly water.
Mostly water.
My bowels have emptied out. And so it's probably 3 pounds of body fat, say. Yeah. Okay, so I better not have more than 3 pounds of body fat that I've put on in the last 3 months. So that means that when I'm, you know, if I'm lifting regularly and I'm also doing some cardio and I'm, you know, and I'm doing my stuff and I'm eating a calorie surplus and even maybe extra protein, some of those days, preferentially like maybe 24, 30 hours after my heavy weightlifting days or, you know, some pattern like that, maybe you have something to add there. Well, then probably I should find a way to be under on the other days so that on average, I'm not gaining very much body fat, because I can only lose 3 pounds every 3 months when I do my fasting mimicking diet. Am I on the right path here?
I would say that that is a moderately fair assumption. What is really cool though about fasting mimicking, for example, in individuals that have very little to no weight to lose at all, is that the body generally will not lose more as long as you're not doing it super excessively, like more frequently than once a month. You know, of course, then there is an upper limit, but especially when you're doing it as infrequently as quarterly, I don't even, for anybody that is of at least a healthy weight, we say a BMI of about 18.5. BMI is like a terrible metric to use, but it is what the kind of fasting mimicking researchers use as their cutoff. So as long as you're within that healthy range, you should be fine to do a fasting mimicking diet quarterly, even if you don't have weight to lose.
Okay, because 18 is pretty low. And so you're saying if you're pretty lean, you still can do a fasting mimicking and get the autophagy cellular rejuvenation effects. Okay.
Exactly. And that, I think, is the key point that I want to make here, is that for many people that are leveraging this tool, they are doing it regardless of weight. They're doing it for the biological age benefit. So just probably since the last time that we spoke, there was a study that was published in Nature showing that the biological age score decreased by 2.5 years with just 3 cycles of the fasting mimicking diet. So that is like that, you know, you were talking about, I just want to find ways to make my body the younger version of itself. I mean, biological age is that clinical metric that allows us to kind of make an assumption as to where you are on that spectrum. And to go back 2.5 years positively, like younger 2.5 years with just grand total of 15 days of intervention is pretty impactful. So that's why no matter who I'm talking to, unless there are reasons why they should be excluded from the list, like maybe they're pregnant or breastfeeding, or they have a very, very low BMI, or they have muscle wasting, or they have a history of eating disorders, or they have an allergy to nuts. Those would pretty much be the only people that I would say, no, don't do this.
You know? Okay. The allergy to nuts is just because of you have nuts in your boxes that you sell. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It's kind of the only way to get some protein in the kit without going overboard and triggering those nutrient sensing pathways.
Yeah.
And so I know that there is a goal to make a nut-free version, but it's really, really tricky because this is highly scientifically curated. Like we're living within very specific boundaries of what can or cannot trigger our nutrient sensing pathways.
Yeah. It is interesting from my talk with Dr. Anton, the idea that you can have food in the morning and it doesn't break your fast. I guess anybody who's ever done a ketogenic diet will know that, you know, they'll have calories in the morning, but they're still in ketosis. And so when you're doing the fasting mimicking, it's the same thing. Once you've gotten into it, you're not hungry anymore because your body is making ketone bodies. And then the food that you do eat, as you are saying, it is designed to not kick you out of ketosis so that you stay in that zone of where you're not hungry, you're not eating very much, but you're not hungry.
Yeah. And importantly, there is some very significant differences between ketogenic protocols and fasting mimicking protocols, because ketogenic protocols do get you into ketosis and so do fasting mimicking protocols. But what ketogenic diets can't do is be low enough in protein to not trigger your nutrient sensing pathways and allow for that cellular cleanup, rejuvenation, autophagy, all of those wonderful benefits. And so, yes, you will experience in both of those states, those increased ketone bodies and maybe that reduction in hunger, maybe even mental clarity that comes with increased ketones. But there is also some things that are lacking with that in terms of longevity benefits.
I got you. Okay. So that's a good distinction. So I guess the only thing we haven't hit on yet is this idea of time-restricted eating. And I don't know if that's in your area of expertise,
totally.
But a lot of people are, you know, they're really caught up in, you know, I only eat in an 8-hour window, or I eat one meal a day, or, you know, things like that. And it does seem to be an effective mechanism to control how much you eat.
Yeah.
But I don't know, you know, is it too short a time to get an autophagy benefit? Or so anyway, tell us what you can about time-restricted eating, how that helps or doesn't really matter. It's a preference thing or whatever.
Okay, so there's so much that I can say about this. I was writing notes because I don't want to forget about a couple of things here. So time-restricted eating certainly has some merits. I don't want to fully poo-poo it, but I want to also say that there are some downsides to it. So I'm going to kind of cover both sides of this world. So time-restricted eating, first, let's define it. It is considered any amount of fasting that is less than 2 days. People are always surprised to hear me say 2 days because they think it's got to be like within a 1-day period. But anything that is less than 2 days is considered time-restricted eating. And the reason why is because you don't really turn on that deep cellular cleanup. So the benefits to time-restricted eating are almost exclusively metabolic weight management type benefits. So I generally will only recommend it for people who do need to reduce their calories for benefit of weight loss. The other reason why you would recommend it is because when you go into time-restricted eating, you get into that ketogenic state. When we fast for about 12 hours, that's when our body starts thinking about switching over to burning fat for fuel instead of burning the sugar for fuel. So there's benefits in time-restricted eating to that part too. So if you are trying to cut fat and if you're trying to lose weight, time-restricted eating can have some benefits there. So I will give it its merit where it is due. And I do use maybe 14-hour fasts up to 16-hour fasts max for people that need to lose weight. But importantly, when we do everyday time-restricted eating, we are also doing everyday increased stress. So fasting gets a lot of the wonderful benefits that it offers because it's considered a hermetic stress or a positive stress. But there is such a thing as too much of a good thing. I know, Joe, you're already shaking your head. You're like, no such thing. But there is such a thing as too much of a good thing. And with time-restricted eating done every single day, especially in healthy individuals, it can be too much stress on the body. And so for that reason, I recommend there is actually a time-restricted eating you can do every day, and it's 12-hour time-restricted eating. It's called circadian time-restricted eating. And it, for many of us who are A-typers and like to do the most all of the time, that can feel like it's not enough. But it is actually a really incredible way to support your body's natural circadian cycles and kind of keep you in sync. So I will say one final thing is that when you are picking your window, whether it be a 12-hour eating window or as little as an 8-hour eating window, if you go as high as 16-hour fasts, right? It's also really important that we try and consume something in the morning. There's a lot of studies about breakfast consumption and cardiovascular health. And we also want to limit our eating later in the evening. And a lot of people use time-restricted eating to just eat a bunch right before dinner, like right at dinner time or late in the evening. Like they just make their one meal or their last chunks of meals in the latter half of the day. And I always recommend if you can, wherever you can, try and just scooch that further up to earlier on in the day because of the way that our body behaves through this circadian rhythm. So this like 24-hour clock that our body listens to. And certain cells have different clocks and our body's blood sugar management cells are working a lot less in the evening as they are in the morning. So all of that to say, limit TRE unless you are looking to cut fat and lose weight, at which point max 16 hours, ideally 14 hours, time-restricted eating. Shift your morning to or shift your eating window to the morning and limit in the evening. And otherwise, 12 hours circadian time-restricted eating every day is chef's kiss.
Okay. And just to clarify, the circadian 12 hours is like stop eating at dinner and eat at breakfast.
Exactly. And ideally, you're having your last bite of food at least about 2 to 3 hours before you go to bed.
Okay. Yeah. I guess if we were going to be like our ancestors, we would eat at sundown or no later than. And then
exactly.
We'd eat at sun up.
Exactly. And that is essentially circadian nutrition.
Okay, good. One last thing then I didn't quite get from you was protein. So the mm-hmm. thing that's been going around, and I've been a believer. In fact, I was a believer right up until I spoke with Dr. Anton. I was mm-hmm. eating for years, maybe 10 years. I was eating a gram of protein per pound of body weight.
Per pound.
Yeah. Yes. And so I was eating about 200 grams of protein every day. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. I love eating protein. And yes. And then suddenly, after talking to Dr. Anton, I thought, you know, I probably don't need that much protein. Yeah. That just is another one of those. That's just giving me license to overeat. I don't need that. Now, maybe I do need that on the days after I have lifted hard and my body is screaming for resources. But mm-hmm. other than that, why would I, you know, I don't need to average 200. So what do you recommend people get? And I don't know whether it's a range, like on your high days, it's this, and your low days, it's this, or average this, you know, whatever you have to say.
Yes. Okay. So this again, and I'm glad that you talked to Dr. Anton about this too, because it is a range and it's a range that depends on activity level and age. So those are two important qualifiers that will determine where you are on that range. And also what you are prioritizing. I'm always going to prioritize longevity. And when we look at longevity, significant excesses in protein, especially animal protein, do consistently show reduction in health span and longevity. Now, significant excesses in protein also show really big muscles. So, you know, you have to decide what's more important to you. But in the term of longevity, which should still be able to give you incredible, beautiful muscles and also help you live long and healthy, the goal is somewhere between 0.8 grams per kilogram. And importantly, this is per kilogram. So you've got to divide your pounds by 2.2-ish. So 0.8 grams per kilogram to 1.2 grams per kilogram. And because you did your 1 gram per pound, I actually double checked and it is 0.54 grams per pound is that 1.2. So on the high end, it's the 0.54.
So it's about half of what I had been
exactly.
doing. Okay.
Exactly.
So, and that's the upper end of the range.
Exactly. And this, by the way, the 1.2 grams per kilogram, like I don't think you'd ever hear Dr. Walter Longo making that recommendation. I think he will cap himself for individuals over 65 at about 1 gram per kilogram. But literature in athlete and sports nutrition do have a higher end of 1.2 grams per kilogram. And that's like literature, sports nutrition, capping it at that. So, you know, beyond that, your body's probably just not really going to use it. And what's really also important to note is that when you are overeating protein, people sometimes think that it's just going to, like, I don't know, mysteriously disappear, flush out of your system. If your muscles don't use it, nothing will. That's not true. If your muscles don't use it, don't need it, then it will be stored as fat just like any other excess that your body consumes. So that is something to just be noting as well. I mean, hopefully your body needs all of this incredible fuel. Amazing. Great. But that's why that balance is so critical.
Yeah. Well, and I guess if what we're worried about is losing our muscle mass or not having enough muscle mass, well, you know, I mean, we'll get a DEXA scan and find out how you compare to, you know, everybody else. And if you're low, well, then you better do something about that. But if you're not low, right, then, okay, well, cut back on the protein and see, do you lose muscle mass? You know, now that you're eating less protein, it's not like I'm going to lose half of my body weight in a week mm-hmm. of eating low protein. So I would have some symptoms of, oh, I'm not eating enough protein. I'm having a problem. I have to do something about that. So what I said when I spoke to Dr. Anton was that I'm going to start eating less protein. And I...
And you did.
I sort of did. On my big days, I still eat just as much. But I try to work in days where I'm not eating that much protein just to average it out.
Yeah. And the other thing that I think is worth noting too is, like, it is, you know, it's kind of this overly complicated math equation because you also have to worry about total calorie intake, right? And when you're worried about total calorie intake and then you're thinking about how much protein you're having, what is going to, and then you potentially reduce your protein calories, that means that you have to fill them up with something else. And you also have to be careful about what you are adding to replace those should you be trying to meet a total calorie intake. And so I think it is kind of a larger calorie and macronutrient question that you should be working ideally with somebody who specializes in those things to figure out what the perfect balance is for you when it comes, like, I don't usually make these recommendations, but for this audience, I absolutely think it makes sense to figure out exactly your calorie needs as well as your macro needs for on days and for off days.
Yeah. Okay.
It is sense. A really easy thing to get your hands on when you, honestly, I bet you ChatGPT does it these days. You could also work with, like, a sports dietitian, and they will figure that out for you and make sure that it's highly personalized to you. And then kind of work within those those boundaries.
Excellent. All right, Renee. Well, thank you very much. So tell our audience how they can find more information about this if they have questions, like how do they find you and ProLawn and things like that.
For sure. So if you are interested in connecting with me, the fastest and easiest way these days is Instagram. So you can connect with me at Fitton Nutrition. That's F-I-T-T-O-N Nutrition. If you are interested in learning more about fasting mimicking, then I recommend ProLawn. That is P-R-O-L-O-N. And their website is ProLawnLife.com.
Awesome. Renee, thank you very much. This has been great. I knew it would be. I'm a big believer in fasting mimicking.
It's incredible. All right. Thank you for having me.
Yep, yep. Hey, you have a great night.
You too.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for joining my conversation with Renee Fitton. You can find more information about Renee and the fasting mimicking diet on our website.